It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here in the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up on Wisconsin Life, we check out a forgotten singing sensation from Sheboygan and take a look at some up-and-coming music from our state.
First, for most people in the United States, safe drinking water is something to be taken for granted. But here in Wisconsin, nearly 1.5 million people rely on private wells for their drinking water. There are serious concerns in some areas about contamination and the potential impact on health.
Just this weekend, the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism released the latest report in their Water Watch Wisconsin series. This story, Failure at the Faucet, focuses on groundwater quality near the former Badger ammunition plant near Baraboo. Over several decades, tons of chemicals and heavy metals were released from the plant and have affected the land and water used by local residents.
Joining us now are Kathy Matthews-Risley and Dee Hall. Kathy's a graduate student in journalism at the UW-Madison. She wrote and reported this story for the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism. Dee Hall is co-founder of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism and currently serves as its managing editor. Kathy, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Dee, thanks for coming into the studio.
Sure, no problem.
So, Kathy, give us some background. What went on at the Badger Ammunitions plant?
In a short story, it's a very long, complicated story, obviously. It was built in 1942. People were moved off the land in order for the plant to be built, but they produced ammunition for the various wars, starting with World War II, and went right through Vietnam. It was decommissioned in 1975. And what's happened in that process and what happened across the country was the disposal of the waste was not done in a way, and as we say in the story, that would be tolerated today. Things were burned in pits and disposed of in waterways, and as a result, there's a lot of groundwater contamination yet today.
And what waterways and groundwater areas are affected by what came out of Badger?
Well, there are three distinct contaminant plumes that are still at Badger in the groundwater, and they are moving very slowly towards the Wisconsin River and Lake Wisconsin. The materials were disposed of, dumped into Gruber's Grove Bay, which is a Lake Wisconsin. Lake Wisconsin was created by the dam in Prairie du Sac, damming the Wisconsin River. So it's a very popular place for people to have homes, second homes, or even their own first homes.
And Dee, how long have there been concerns about water quality in this area around Badger Ammo?
Well, I think the remediation attempt, or at least the investigation attempts, started, you know, more than 30 years ago.
About 1980 is when they first started.
Right. So they started figuring out that, hey, this might be a real problem. And then there have been monitoring of wells ever since then. And, you know, of course, they did turn up a variety of compounds in the water. Some of them are cancer-causing. Some of them have other serious health effects. And so, you know, folks there have been concerned about using their water. A lot of them use bottled water.
And Kathy, tell us more about the materials that they have found and the kind of levels we're talking about.
Sure. The DNT, and I'm afraid I will not pronounce it correctly, but DNT is the acronym they use. It was developed, or it is a compound used, I believe, in the production of the smokeless gunpowder. And also TCE, trichloroethylene, was a solvent. It's one of the volatile organic compounds that were used widely across the country. But this was, I think, for maybe metal parts. Exactly how it was used, I'm not positive. And then there was carbon tetrachloride. Those are the three main elements right now that they are discovering in various small levels in wells, as Dee mentioned. They're monitoring on site, but also they have been monitoring private wells, and that's how they discover that there are elements there. And some of them are exceeding the enforcement standards that have been set by the state. So that's where the concern is that still so many years after the cleanup started, you're seeing these excessive amounts.
You follow one person who's lived in this area on and off for a long time, Mary Jane Cook, for most of the last 50 years. She had stories of her childhood and then being there as an adult and encountering similar water problems.
Hers is an incredible story because she witnessed it as a teenager when they bought their cottage It was a family cottage north of what is where the Prairie du Sac Dam is now. It's on Gruber's Grove, which is where things were disposed of. And it was a small cabin that they went to and enjoyed water skiing and all of that. But she remembers things like water rushing out of pipes that came under Highway 78 and that actually pushing the bottom of the lake up towards the cabin. She remembers the muck that her mom actually got stuck at one point. She remembers just they didn't know exactly where it was coming from. Well, this was in the 60s, and things were and that's when Badger was back up and running for the Vietnam, getting geared up for Vietnam War. So she saw these things happening. They actually built a home in 77 about a mile and a half south of that cottage, and they're there till today. So she's been part of this investigation, so to speak, for a long time.
Talking to Kathy Matthews-Risley and Dee Hall, both from the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, looking at groundwater and waterways around the old Badger ammo plant near Baraboo. Dee, I want you to put this into context for us. This is part of a wider series on water in Wisconsin. There aren't many places, I imagine, that have gotten as much scrutiny as the area around the Badger ammo plant. How unique is this site?
Well, it is unique in the sense that there are these 400 monitoring wells. They've really been tracking the contamination there for a long time. But this is part of a larger series called Failure at the Faucet that we launched several weeks ago and will continue through the end of the year and early into next year. And it's based on primarily student reporting from a journalism class at the University of Wisconsin-Madison with our help, with the center's help. And we discovered that there's a lot of potential contamination out there that is simply undiscovered at this point because there are so many people, for example, who rely on private wells. 1.7 million people drink water from private wells. The vast majority of those wells have rarely, if ever, been tested for a variety of contaminants. We've also got other things that we're looking at. There are natural contaminants like radium and strontium that we're finding at surprising levels, at such high levels, in fact, that wells have to be closed down. Waukesha, for example, is talking about hundreds of millions of dollars worth of expenses to draw water from Lake Michigan, which is very controversial. But that's primarily related to the fact that the deeper they drill, the more radium they find. So that our main thrust of the series is to let people know that there are dangers, including lead in people's water, that they're most likely not aware of.
And Kathy, for people like Mary Jane Cook, there have been periods, long periods maybe, where they can't drink the water in their taps?
Right. When she found out, the Army had been testing private wells back in about 2004. That's when they discovered DNT in a couple of private wells in a neighboring subdivision. So they also tested her wells at that time and found ethyl ether. And at that point, she was notified by the Army. They brought bottled water. And at that point, she decided not to ever drink from her tap again. So she doesn't. To this day, she drinks bottled water. I guess this would be a time to say that the Army is looking at a proposed water system that they would put in for residents, about 400 residents along the town of Merrimack, Sumter, and Prairie du Sac that would be able to use the system. It's not a done deal at this point. There's been meetings and public open public sessions to talk about it, but at this point, it's still probably a year away.
I know there have been remediation efforts, dredging, things like that, but I want to talk about transparency. Mm-hmm. Is there a sense in this case that people know what they need to know from when the plant was operating and since then?
That's a really good question. I mean, I found a lot of information, but I did a lot of digging as well. There have been questions. My own question was, how did some of these homes get built in this area? Because they knew about the issues. There have been a lot of sessions where they will talk about the cleanup and the Army and the DNR and how it is. The levels are dropping, but the thing is, it's been going on for so many years, 30 years, and it's still there, and that's what people hear. And even though they're containing it, as they say, they're relying on natural attenuation to take care of the problem. Well, anyone living near the site and having a private well is concerned. What if it doesn't do what they think it's going to do?
And Dee, on a wider note, staying with the issue of transparency, do people have a right to know and ability to get information about what the water is like in their area, especially well owners?
Well, well owners can have their own wells tested, but there doesn't seem to be any particular program to warn people. One of the other folks that we profiled in our story about nitrate built a beautiful home also close to the Wisconsin River down near Spring Green, and they were mortified to find out that their water was twice the health standard for nitrate after they drilled their well. They felt like they were completely blindsided by the fact that their water was not safe to drink for, especially that nitrate is very dangerous to young, like babies and pregnant women. And they, at the time, they had, you know, a couple of their daughters-in-law and a daughter were pregnant. They had little grandchildren running around, and they just felt really blindsided by the fact that their water was completely unsafe.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you both so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dee Hall is managing editor of the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, and Kathy Matthews Risley is a graduate student in journalism at the UW-Madison. She wrote and reported on this story for WCIJ. We'll get a link to their reporting on the Central Time Facebook page. Wisconsin has bred many famous musicians, maybe none with as much seemingly innocent charm as the Cordettes. Dean Robbins introduces us to the harmonious singing sensations from Sheboygan.
I've always imagined Wisconsin in the 1950s as an extraordinarily innocent place. What other conclusion can I draw after hearing the Cordettes?
Listen and we'll tell you how to bobble jack.
The Cordettes were a female vocal quartet formed by college friends in Sheboygan. They wore matching party dresses and shapely Donna Reed hairdos. The friends chose their name back when musical groups were earnest rather than edgy. Female bachelors were bachelorettes, so why wouldn't four women singing beautiful chords be the Cordettes? The group performed around Sheboygan, inspired by cheerful female pop acts like the Andrews Sisters and Boswell Sisters. One member's dad loved barbershop quartets, so that style became an influence too. The Cordettes' breakthrough was a winning performance on Arthur Godfrey's talent show in 1949. Godfrey made them regulars on his program, and that led to a contract with Cadence Records. Then came their first bid for pop immortality, 1954's Mr. Sandman.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
This two-minute gem stayed at number one for 7 weeks, and it's easy to see why. Nothing better represents the wholesome side of the 1950s. With sweet barbershop harmonies, the Cordettes pine for a cute guy to call their own. They want him to have wavy hair, and they think it would be peachy to meet him right away. Yes, they actually use the word peachy. Is it any wonder that the Bobby Soxers down at the malt shop made Mr. Sandman their anthem? Coincidentally, Elvis Presley cut his first record in 1954. And it wasn't long before rowdy rock and roll transformed the music business. While many old-fashioned vocal groups fell out of favor, the Cordettes tried to keep up with the times.
This is going to be a tremendous record. It's only been out 2 weeks. Featuring the Cordettes, Lollipop!
The rhythms were bolder than Mr. Sandman's, and the harmony sharper.
Lollipop, lollipop, oh,
still, no one would mistake the Cordettes for 1950s juvenile delinquents. Their version of Lollipop is about as clean-cut as the rock and roll genre ever got. In live performances of the new hit, they smiled graciously and threw candy to the audience. The Cordettes continued to top the charts at the dawn of the 1960s, but their days were clearly numbered. Bob Dylan and the Beatles would soon change our view of top 40 music, just as the feminist movement would soon change our view of women. Sheboygan's pop sensation broke up in 1961. I don't think I'd want to live in the absurdly innocent Wisconsin conjured up by Mr. Sandman, Lollipop, and the Cordettes' dozen other hits. But for 2 minutes at a time, it's an irresistible place to visit.
Dean Robbins is a writer from Madison. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more online at wisconsinlife.org.
We just heard about the Cordettes from Sheboygan. It might have surprised some of us, myself included, to hear that such huge hit songs like Mr. Sandman and Lollipop came from a group from our state.
And joining us now to talk about some other significant and influential music to come out of Wisconsin is our WPR colleague, Scott Gordon. He's also editor of Tone Madison. Scott, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So a lot of people know the names Garbage, maybe the Violin Femmes, but who are some of the other influential Wisconsin groups or musicians that have been maybe overlooked over the years?
Well, you know, there's quite a few. The first one that I wanted to talk about was the Shivers, who were a power pop band from Milwaukee in the late 70s and early 80s. And I guess the Cordettes, in a way, make something of a good jumping off point because, you know, in power pop, you have this sort of unabashedly sweet and catchy melodies and, you know, often lyrics that maybe aren't quite as innocent, but still very, you know, pop-focused lyrics and just, a bit more of an edge to it.
Well, let's give a listen. This is a song you set us up with, Teen Line by the Shivers. That's late 70s, early 80s power pop. I never would have guessed. Yeah, that really is of that era, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. You know, there's a bit of that kind of new wave thing in there. And, they were kind of popular locally at the time, but never became hugely famous or anything. But, you know, over time, the interest in them has persisted. There's still many people of a lot of different ages who are really into digging that stuff up. And there have been some reissues, so that it's a lot more widely available now.
Well, so on the heavier side of things, I know it's heavier because the band's name is in German. We have a Milwaukee band produced by Butch Vig from Garbage, Die Kreuzen.
Right, and not all of their records were produced by Butch Vig, but they were a band that formed in the early 80s, and, you know, kind of the shorthand for them is that they were tied to the hardcore movement. But, you know, the thing about the punk and hardcore is that if you really look at it, there's so much more musical variety in there than the shorthand kind of would suggest. And in 1986, they put out their second album called Oktoberfile on Touch and Go, which I think really exemplifies that.
Waiting for the vocals there. So Die Kreuzen, a little harder side of Wisconsin. I don't necessarily think of Wisconsin as the home to heavy metal that much.
Well, you know, there is a lot of good punk and metal spread out around the state. If you know where to look, it's not always the thing that just by nature comes to mind for a lot of people, but it's definitely been there. And, you know, this was a band that, was kind of considered one of the great bands of that era of, you know, kind of hardcore stuff and kind of the noisier stuff on Touch and Go and stuff. If you were to ask someone like Thurston Moore or Steve Albini, I'm sure they would point to Die Kreuzen as a great example of music from that time.
And so how about for Watching the Horizon, for some new acts, some up-and-comers, who should we be keeping an eye on?
Well, there's a lot of variety throughout the state right now, which I think is really great. One thing that I've been kind of hooked on recently is the first kind of two-song single from a band called Dusk, and they're from Appleton. They're actually playing tonight at the Frequency in Madison, and they have kind of one member in common with an Appleton band called Tenement, who are a really great punk band who put out a great album this year. But Dusk is a little more it's a little more of kind of a ramshackle like country R&B sound, and they have a song that's sung by the keyboardist Julia Blair called Too Sweet that I think has been really particularly addictive for me lately.
We'll get a little taste of Too Sweet. Fox Valley band Appleton. We hear a lot about Eau Claire here. We talked a lot of Eau Claire bands in our summer music series, but they've got a big thing. They've got that big mile of music there in the Fox cities.
That's in Oshkosh, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been, but I hear a lot about it, and I know they pulling bands from all over the state, and seems to be a wildly popular.
Well, let's check out one more before we're out of time here. You sent us one called Same Old Blues by the Bellhops. Who are the Bellhops?
So the Bellhops were a band that came out of the First Wave program at UW-Madison, and First Wave recently celebrated its 10-year anniversary, actually, and it's basically a program that centers around hip-hop, but you certainly have people who come into that program who are MCs, but also there's also, you know, connections to theater and dance and singing, and kind of it's a very multidisciplinary approach to, you know, to hip-hop or in that realm. And so it's drawn a lot of really interesting people to Madison. The Bellhops were a band that several people in that program formed as a platform for female songwriters of color, and they put out this EP earlier this year called Hero of My Own Tale, and it's six songs, and the arrangements are really rich, and so is the lyrical content and the singing are really spanning kind of jazz and blues and R&B and some spoken word.
All right, here's a little bit of Same Old Blues. Scott, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Scott Gordon is the editor of Tone Madison, also a colleague here at WPR. We've been talking about music made in Wisconsin, past and present.
Coming up, the founder of StoryCorps joins us to tell us about the Great Thanksgiving Listen. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time.
When you get the blues, ooh, you get the blues. You get the blues.
The founder of StoryCorps wants to double the archives this coming Thursday for the Great Thanksgiving Listen. The idea is for young people to interview their parents, their grandparents, a loved one from an older generation, and then upload the conversation using the free StoryCorps app. StoryCorps has some suggested questions to get you started, but the main plan here is that listening is an act of caring, that making time for stories helps draw people together, and it makes sure that the key stories get passed on.
Dave Isay joins us now. He's the founder and creator of StoryCorps, and his books include All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. Dave, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Veronica. Hi, Rob.
So in your words, what is the Great Thanksgiving Listen?
So StoryCorps has been around for about a dozen years, and as a lot of listeners know, we have these booths across the country where two people can come and, with the help of a trained facilitator, have this conversation, important conversation, meaningful conversation, and at the end of the interview, you get a copy and another one goes to the Library of Congress, so your great-great-grandkids can get to know whoever you interviewed, your grandmother, your mother, a friend, through his or her voice and story. A few months ago, we released our first app. I won this thing called the TED Prize, and I confess I was the only person left on the face of the earth who hadn't seen a TED Talk when they called me to say that I had won this thing. But it was $1 million to fulfill a dream, and that dream was to create an app that makes it possible for people to do StoryCorps anytime, anyplace, on your mobile device, and then with one tap, upload it to the Library of Congress. So we released this a few months ago, and I wanted to get a sense of whether people were using it with fidelity, whether it was going to work, whether the technology was up to snuff. And we kind of ran it slowly for a couple months and worked out the kinks, and decided a couple months ago to try this kind of crazy thing this week, where we are asking every U.S. history, social studies teacher, high school teacher in the country to assign their students to record an elder, a grandparent, a parent, an older sibling over Thanksgiving weekend using the app so that, you know, theoretically we could honor a whole generation of Americans in one weekend. So we still have a long way to go before Thursday, but it's exciting. And we have school systems across the country adopting this and all kinds of interesting things happening. I think it's exciting for a bunch of reasons, including the fact that, you know, cell phones are you know, seem to, in so many ways, drive us deeper into ourselves. And this is a way to use our mobile devices to kind of meaningfully connect with someone else in our lives. And, you know, that as Rob said earlier in the intro, you know, listening to a loved one is just such an important way of telling them how much they mean to you, and reminding them that their lives matter and they won't be forgotten. So we'll see if we can create this little national moment over the next couple days.
Well, Dave, we pulled some samples from your extensive StoryCorps archives just to give people a sense of what kind of stories get told. And I know it's a huge range. We'll start with one that's the story of a father talking to his young daughter about how much he loves her. We'll give a listen.
So, Daddy, how did you feel when I was born?
It was like a dream come true. I wanted a child forever. And you were my first and only born, you know, so when I went to the nursery to see you, you were sleeping. And then you opened the eyes and looked at me. Everybody was amazed. Even the doctor said, you see the connection she make with you?
Maybe that's why I love you so much. But I've heard that you cried a lot.
Yes, I did. Tears of joy. I was so happy to have you.
Screaming?
Screaming, crying. It's like sunshine comes into our house. It's so nice to be with you. You always come up with some new questions.
That's when I'm annoying you, right?
Well, not annoying me. It's like you're challenging me.
But, Dad, why do you leave so much instead of staying here with me? That's what's more important.
Boo-boo, I have to go to work. Daddy worked two jobs. So you're going to have to go to my boss and ask him to give me days off.
I will.
Okay, I know you will. You know, I cannot be home all the time. But if I have enough time, I will do 4, 5, 10, 100 jobs for your education. It's a joy to do that, knowing that I'm doing that for you. Because I'm so proud to have you as a daughter.
Oh, Dave, I just love this story, partially because you can hear the love in the father's voice and the daughter's voice. It just, you can see how this is really a gift of love, can't you?
Yeah, it's funny. I only heard that once when it was broadcast. It's nice to hear it again. I know that obviously he's a Haitian immigrant and is working two jobs, including as a parking attendant in New York City, and they came to StoryCorps. His daughter's 9.
We're talking to Dave Isay from StoryCorps about an effort to get people to listen, to collect stories and upload them to StoryCorps on their new app. It's called the Great Thanksgiving Listen. Now, Dave, in my head, I think, okay, people could talk about these things anytime, but by and large, they don't. What is it about setting up this sort of semi-formal interview setting that gets people going?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, you two know, you know, as well as anybody, of the power of a microphone to give people the opportunity to talk about things they don't normally get to talk about. And as you said, I mean, I think it's the formality of the kind of the system we've worked out to record these StoryCorps interviews. It's the, you know, the length of time. It's knowing that it's going to the Library of Congress. And there's just a magic to it. You know, I have to say that when we launched the app, I had, you know, I really had concerns that people are going to abuse the app, that, you know, because of the coarseness of the internet, that people were going to not get it, you know. But it's been just amazing over the last couple of months to listen to the stories that have come over. And basically they all go into a feed and it goes to the Library of Congress. And I have time to listen when I'm going to the grocery store on Sunday night, including last night, to these stories. And it's just beautiful to hear how, you know, people just pick this up. I mean, people who have never heard of public radio, people who have certainly never heard of StoryCorps in like small towns in the South, small towns in the Midwest, and they just get it. You know, they're just natural at having these conversations, and they immediately open up and have these really, really meaningful conversations and say the things to the people who matter to them that you just don't normally get to say.
And what about some of the stories that may be more difficult, maybe harder to hear, because those stories are part of us just as much as the joyful stories and the loving stories? How does StoryCorps facilitate some of those more difficult conversations?
Well, I mean, I think, again, on the app, the app is sort of, as I said, a digital facilitator. So I think that from listening to StoryCorps stories, I mean, a lot of them are difficult. People are talking about the most important moments of their lives. And some of them are going to be happy, but it's a lot about, you know, death and loss. And so, you know, I think that nobody talks about what they don't want to talk about. But, you know, people want to talk about these things. It's cathartic for people. And, you know, having the formality, as Rob said, of this StoryCorps conversation gives people the chance to delve into these moments that are difficult. You know, one of the questions, when you go on the StoryCorps app, just like when you participate in what we now call Signature StoryCorps, there's a question generator. It's on the web for the people who participate in booths and on the app for people who are participating on their mobile device. And it leads you through, you know, there are great Thanksgiving listen questions and the most popular questions and, you know, a dozen other categories of questions. And even in the most popular questions, there are questions like, you know, what are the most difficult moments in your life? Questions like, how do you want to be remembered, which is a tough question also. I mean, I think that there's something about StoryCorps that, you know, speaks to our mortality. I mean, people are aware that these are going to the Library of Congress, that their great-great-great-great-great-grandkids are going to hear them someday. And I think people are comfortable talking about the joyful moments and the not so joyful moments.
Well, here's an example of one of those non-joyful, a difficult moment from the StoryCorps archives. This is the story of Gwen Motrin, who lost her friend Denise in 1963 in the 16th Street Church bombing in Birmingham, Alabama.
Denise and I, we went everywhere together. We stayed over each other's house. We'd sleep in the same bed. And we had become so close that the teachers actually separated us. The last time I saw Denise was the night before the bombing. I remember her mother asking my mother if I could go with her to church the next day, but my mother said no. So I walked her to the door, and I said, I'll see you later. And I recall that so clearly because for so long I couldn't say those words, I'll see you later.
There's a lot of moments like that, I imagine, Dave, that come out in StoryCorps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I think people feel, you know, feel safe to talk about those moments. And I also think, you know, that you know, what you hear there is something we hear on StoryCorps all the time, which is kind of bottom-up history. Studs Terkel, the great oral historian who passed away a bunch of years ago, when he was 93, he cut the ribbon on our first booth. And he was a great proponent of history told through our voices, our stories. And I think that, you know, that's part of what, you know, the StoryCorps archive is going to contribute to American history.
We're talking with Dave Isay right now. He's the founder and president of StoryCorps, joining us to talk about the Great Thanksgiving Listen, which is coming up this Thursday.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you ever participated in StoryCorps? Are you planning to this Thanksgiving weekend? Are you a student, a parent, or a teacher who's going to do something with this Great Thanksgiving Listen? And have you had this moment, recorded or otherwise, where you got that story maybe from an older relative that you never thought you'd hear? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking now with Dave Isay. He's the founder and president of StoryCorps, joining us to talk about the Great Thanksgiving Listen.
And we want to hear from you. Will your kids participate in interviewing older generations and their family over the holiday? What about you? Have you seen the power of storytelling, maybe in your own family? Have you participated in StoryCorps before? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we go right to our callers now. We have Kathleen joining us first from Racine. Kathleen, hi.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling. I'm so happy to hear this. StoryCorps has been a big part of my life. I've known about it from the beginning. And, it was about 12 years ago when you came to Madison with your Airstream trailer. And I took my mom, who we pretty much knew was coming close to the end of her life, and I took her up there and interviewed her, and it was just wonderful. Well, she passed away the next year, and my brother took that recording, and he interjected songs from the 40s. And, you know, that was their time, and they were both so into this kind of music, and it has become even a more wonderful recording. We just cherish it. And I just think StoryCorps is just wonderful, and I am definitely going to do something with this on Thanksgiving. But it's
Excellent.
Just And my father has passed away. I also interviewed him in Milwaukee. So these are just treasures for us. And I just wanted to share that.
Well, Kathleen, thank you so much. I'm sorry about the loss of your parents, but so happy that you had that, sounds like, transformative experience of getting to have these stories, and you have that part of them now. And Dave, is that something that you hear in StoryCorps, that there are these moving moments between maybe parents and children like this, that after maybe the parents are gone, this is something that's really treasured?
We hear it every day. You know, the main, the signature StoryCorps archive that Kathleen participated in booths and mobile booths has about 65,000 interviews in it. And, you know, we get messages like that every single day. You know, I do think in some ways StoryCorps shares something with hospice, I think, in that, you know, the people who work in hospice talk about the things you want to say to the people who matter to you before you die or they die, which are thank you, I love you, forgive me, I forgive you. And I think in some ways, while these interviews, hopefully the person you're talking to isn't actively dying, it does give you the opportunity to have this kind of sense of closure and say those important things to the people who matter to you. And, you know, you're always going to learn something new from the person you're talking to, and you're never going to regret it. And, Kathleen, I'm also sorry for your loss. And, you know, I'll say, you know, the Great Thanksgiving Listen is about teachers assigning an interview to their students, and it's not just Thursday. They can do it Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, anytime over the weekend, and then upload it to the Library of Congress. I know there are probably teachers who haven't heard about this yet, and it may be too late. I don't know if public schools are in session this week at all, or just today and tomorrow. But even if you haven't been assigned this, you know, everybody can participate this weekend or any other time. But I hope you'll join us on Thanksgiving weekend just to be a part of this, you know, hopefully this moment.
Kathleen, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Graham in Lafarge. Graham, hi.
Hi there. What a great topic. I was telling the person answered the phone. When my brother was in junior high, he recorded some of my grandpa telling some of his old stories of growing up on the farm, and probably 10 years later, grandpa had passed away for quite a while. We had our farm centennial. Farm had been in the family 100 years, so we had a great big picnic, had the whole family out, and my brother made a photo video montage and had grandpa's voice in the background of all the pictures, and it was a surprise to most of the family, and it was just the most powerful moment. Unbelievable to have the old black and white pictures with grandpa, in his own words, telling the stories that went along with them.
That's fantastic, Graham. Wow, what a treasure. Dave, so you're collecting these at StoryCorps and in the Library of Congress, but people can use these to tell stories to their future generations.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the families get a copy of the interview, and on the app, you can access it off your own account. People sign up and get their own account, or off the stream of stories. You just have to search them. You want to put keywords in so they're findable with the names of the people who have talked and you know where it was recorded and so forth. But yeah, and you know we hear Graham stories like yours of using interviews in, you know, after folks have died. You know, to me, and you know, I think you all know as radio folks, Veronica and Rob, the, you know, the soul is kind of contained in the voice. And I just think it's a very, you know, powerful record to leave for, you know, for your kids, for your grandkids, for your great-great-grandkids. It's really the best way of explaining. I mean, I think that in some ways, the kind of interview that Graham's family did, the 40-minute StoryCorps interviewer, is the best way to, you know, capture a person for who they are, if that's possible, in a brief period of time, like 40 minutes.
We're talking about the Great Thanksgiving Listen happening this Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving weekend with StoryCorps founder and president Dave Isay. His books include All There Is, Love Stories from StoryCorps. And this weekend could be any story. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the stories, Dave. We haven't been talking as much about the listening. How important is the listening that's going on?
Well, I think StoryCorps, despite the name, is much more about listening than storytelling, and that's really what it's all about. It's, you know, I think StoryCorps is kind of the opposite of reality TV. Nobody comes to get rich. Nobody comes to get famous. It's this act of generosity and love, and it's all in the listening. It's about sitting with someone who matters to you and asking those questions. You know, who are you? How do you want to be remembered? What are the lessons you've learned in life? And it's that you know, careful, thoughtful listening that is, you know, at the core of everything that happens in a StoryCorps interview. The stories, you know, in some ways, it's much more about the connection than about the stories themselves. And, you know, for us, there are stories that get on the radio, the stories you've played, stories people hear on Morning Edition. But every interview is, you know, we see as equally valuable, you know, because it does give people the opportunity to say those important things to the people who matter to them. Some of them have this quality about them that make them appropriate to share with a larger audience, but that's not really what it's about. The storytelling is secondary. The connection is what it's all about.
Let's listen to one more excerpt from a story. This one is retired Marine Corps Major Donnie Dunnigan, who kept the secret of being the voice of Bambi.
Did anyone know that you were the voice of Bambi?
During the Marine Corps? No chance. I never said a word to anybody about Bambi. Even to you, when we first met, I never said a word about it. Most of the image in people's minds of Bambi was a little frail deer, not doing very well, sliding around on the ice on his belly.
Mother, look! What's all that white stuff?
It's snow.
Snow?
I am a commander in Marine Corps boot camp, drill instructors, hundreds of recruits I'm responsible for. I just thought to myself, I don't think I want all these young Marines to start calling me Major Bambi, and I kept my mouth shut.
I like that one, too. It kind of speaks for itself, Dave, but what speaks to you about that one?
Well, that's just, it's a fun story. And that, you know, the kind of hidden history that you know, emerges sometimes in these StoryCorps interviews. You know, it's when I started StoryCorps, after I used to make radio documentaries, and I thought that there were only a finite number of kind of conversations that a couple, a grandparent and a grandkid could have, and that the stories would start repeating after a while. And now, you know, we're a dozen years into StoryCorps, and the stories just get better. I was remembering as you were playing that there's one of my, I really don't pick favorite stories, but I have to say one of my absolute favorite stories comes from Wisconsin. And if people go to StoryCorps.org, you can find a story of a guy named Lyle Link, who's talking with his granddaughter about being a dairy farmer. It's just gorgeous. It just popped into my mind.
Well, Dave, I don't want to get through here without letting you give the practical details. If people want to participate over Thanksgiving weekend, how do they get the app? What do they do when they get it? That kind of stuff.
Sure. So, again, most of these are being done as an in-class assignment, but at this point, it may be too late to do that. So get in touch with your school or just do this yourself. You can go to thegreatlisten.org and find out everything you want to know. There's a toolkit for teachers, and then there's information for people who aren't teachers. But it's very, very, very easy. Download the app onto your phone and just do an interview. The important thing is just to do it. And to honor someone in your life by listening to them. You pick the questions you want to ask before you ask them. You go to a quiet room with the person you're interviewing. You hold the phone close to that person's mouth. It's about as far as, you know, you would see a microphone in a studio, one spread out hand's length away from your mouth and the person you're interviewing, and you just do it. And again, you know, you can do a StoryCorps interview anytime, but it's so easy to put it on your I'll get to it list. And then, you know, time goes on, and, you know, Kathleen and Graham talked about how fleeting life is, you know, and you just want to do it now. So I hope people will take time this Thanksgiving, whether it's part of a classroom assignment or not, to do these interviews with the people who matter.
And Dave, you've been at this for more than a decade. Are there people still left on your list that you want to interview?
Yeah, there are. You know, one of the things that I run around a lot, and I have time to do one or two StoryCorps interviews a year. But there are still, you know, it's a great way to thank people who've been important in your life. I find when there's someone at StoryCorps who's worked here for, you know, a decade and leaves, I'll do a StoryCorps interview with them. And when you sit for that 40 minutes, even though you've worked side by side with them for 10 years, you find out all kinds of things you never knew.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for joining us. Good luck on getting all those stories this weekend.
Thank you both. Happy holidays.
To you too. That's Dave Isay, founder and president of StoryCorps, talking about the great Thanksgiving listen. Find info on the Central Time Facebook page.